Moncrief on News Talk.
Yes, it is indeed time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right, first question. Now, this is kind of a slightly shortened version, actually considerably shortened version of the question that was sent in. But of course, Joanna has seen the long version as well. Anyway, I'm divorced with two teenage girls. My ex has had addiction issues in the past. He's a very controlling man and has put a lot of pressure on the girls in terms of spending time with him, when our agreement clearly states that they decide where they go and when. As a result, I'm never sure if they want to be in his house, if they're being pressurised to be there. They are two lovely girls. I recently received a call from my daughter a few hours after he picked them up. She was very upset and crying on the phone. She had gone to the bathroom, the only one in the house, and had found sex toys left on the main floor area. Her sister, after much discussion between them, went to their dad and asked him to clean up his things in the bathroom, which he did. I asked her if she wanted to come and me to get her straight away, but she refused, but asked to come home the next day. Their dad spoke to them before they left and told them there was nothing wrong with using any of the items. I spoke with both girls when they came home and let them know that it was inappropriate to have these items in a family bathroom. They should have been kept privately, and asked them if I could speak with their dad about it. I'm so worried for them. I'm at a loss about their next best way to support them with this. They both went back to his house for the next visit, even though they said they didn't want to use the bathroom.
Oh, I mean, yes, there's layers to this one. And like, the bottom line is it's not OK. What happened is not OK for a number of reasons, but not least of which is, and I think particularly when you're co-parenting, what children, these girls are teenagers, it doesn't matter how old you are, you want to know that you're held in mind by the people you're not with when you're not with them, that they think about you, consider you, and they anticipate you coming and make plans for your visit, all of that. And this is a reminder that he didn't. Because he left this stuff all over the bathroom floor, the only bathroom in the house. They were definitely going to go in. And it wasn't like, I'm going to collect the girls. Oh my gosh, I better sort out the bathroom. You know, he just didn't consider how they might experience this, and they weren't held in mind. I think that's very disappointing for kids as well when they're confronted with that. But I also think that confronting your teenagers with your sex life as an adult, as their parent, and then placing the demand and the expectation that they be okay with it.
Yeah.
Be okay. This is cool. This is totally normal. Nothing wrong with this. I mean, if you're bothered about it, that's on you. You know, that's very twisting of the situation. And, you know, it's not mindful of how any teenager doesn't want to think of their parents having an intimate life ever.
Yes.
Never mind to be confronted with it in such a forceful way. And, you know, I think, you know, if one of them was upset enough to call the other parent, then dad knew that that child was upset. Then looking to go home, not immediately, but just, you know, managing overnight and then looking to go home. The other thing though, Sean, about this letter is when the parent writing into us says, you know, I spoke with the girls and I asked them if it was okay. Could I talk to their dad?
Yeah, that was an odd one as
well.
That's
jumping out at me, because I'm kind of going, do you need their consent to have that conversation as co-parents in this situation? And the fact that that you did ask them, and whatever they've said, and kids will often, especially this age, say, no, don't say anything. Don't talk to him. It's grand. Just don't make it worse, you know, because they don't want to upset anyone and they just want to move past
it. I wonder, is that the reason why she asked them? Because
it could
maybe it's led to rows in the past.
It could be. But also, this is something as parents that you need to be able to have a conversation about. Look, the girls came home upset. They are, you know, agreeing to go back to you, but going forward, we need to make sure this doesn't happen again. That's too much for them. That's overwhelming. And it's not appropriate. Literally from this coming down to boundaries and respect.
Yeah,
like absolutely. It's an unboundaried behaviour when you have two teenage girls in the house. It's just not okay. And it just has that kind of ick feel to it, the way it's been handled. I'm just summarising it with that.
And to give him the benefit of the doubt, he realised what he'd done, and then he knew they were upset and he handled it all wrong.
Exactly.
By missing the point of they shouldn't have been in the bathroom for them to see, not the fact of their existence.
Oh, no, nothing to do with their existence. Yeah. That's his own business.
Yeah.
But he's made it his daughter's business.
Yes.
By the way this. And you're right. It's the handling of it. If he'd come and said, I am mortified. This is never a conversation I thought we'd ever have to have. I apologize. I should have made sure that the bathroom was clear for you girls. I'm not apologizing for having a personal life, but I am apologising that you were exposed to this and I can see you're upset. Do you want me to call your mum? Would you like to go home? That's a different handling of this. That's not how this is being represented here. I would be going back to your girls, though, and just reminding them, you know, just gently, without agenda, because I don't know, I don't feel there's an agenda here with this parent other than I want the girls to be okay, that the agreement states that they can decide when they go and where they go. And I'm not for one moment saying they shouldn't see their dad, because that's not the right thing either. But they could decide based on this, and I'm not comfortable right now going to the house, can we meet in a restaurant, in a cafe? Can we hang out? Can we do something else and repair this relationship?
Yeah.
Because there is a rupture here.
Yeah.
There is a breach of trust. There is a discomfort, and there is the embarrassment factor for the girls as well. I don't know if dad's embarrassed. He might be, by the way, but he's handling it in this way. But that they get to decide where they see him, because this bit about they are going back to his house for the next visit, but they don't want to use the bathroom and it's the only bathroom in the house. I mean, that's not a sustainable solution.
Yeah.
What are they supposed to do for their whole visit?
Yeah, he's a very controlling man.
That's clear here. Yeah.
Yeah. Who tells him? Well, not to be negative, but, you know, I suppose the mom would ring him and say, look, you know, and then he's going to go to, oh, you're putting them up to this. And
possibly, or put it to the girls, why would you talk to your mother like this and then bring that on me? And we don't know that, but we might infer it from the way this is being spoken about. But I do think that the girls need space. Now, with either parent, the girls are not going to say, I'm dying to pull up a chair and talk to you about what I saw on the bathroom floor. Do you know? So because of the that is the level of discomfort with this. But it was enough to cause a level of distress and upset that one of them phoned mum to cry, to be upset. And they had to spend time building each other up as to which of them, tag you're it, was going to go and say, can you pick that stuff off the bathroom floor so that we can access the bathroom? It's really not okay.
Yeah, it's no.
Just 100%. To validate the girl's experience, it's really not okay. It wasn't handled. The fact that it's not appropriate, the handling of it was also not appropriate. So I would be speaking with the girls, and they're teenagers. I don't know what that means, but they are obviously of an age or fast getting to an age where they have much more say in access arrangements than younger kids do.
Yeah, yeah. Best of luck with that, crikey.
Yeah.
I have a 2-year-old daughter who's just learning how to speak. She's adding new words to her vocabulary every day. The latest is bald, to describe her father's lack of hair. It's great that she's picking up the words we give her, but this particular word has started to cause me embarrassment in public, only because my daughter has begun pointing at strangers when we're out and shouting bald repeatedly. Obviously, it's all innocent and she can't comprehend that she may cause offence, but I don't really know what to do with the situation. You can't really reason with a 2-year-old and tell her why some people may be offended by this. Any advice?
Just, you know, take a deep breath and ride the wave. Like, there really isn't a whole lot you can do here. Every parent has been in this situation because at this age, new words are exciting. Like, it's exciting, and
absolutely.
People tend to be excited for you when you get a new word and they ask you to say it over and over. And really what she's doing is she's discovering that people are different and there are different words to describe those differences. This is all really exciting. It's really good developmental stuff and it's really typical. I acknowledge what she's saying and then distract. Distraction is your best friend when you're parenting a toddler in so many areas, including this one. First of all, I do want to say I'm not sure calling someone bald is offensive.
Well, I was going to pick up on that because it's a statement of fact.
That's what it is to this child.
There's way worse things she could be pointing at people.
Brace yourself.
Saying.
They're coming. They're definitely coming, those way worse things.
Yes, I know. You know.
Exactly. It's like saying brown hair, blonde hair. Yeah. It's just a statement of say what you see.
Yeah.
Which is what children do. And it's how we get them speaking when you think about it. We point at things, we name them, we get them to repeat it and we applaud them for doing so. So say what you see is
I think the parent here is baldest and has to reevaluate their own values there.
But I do think if you say to her, if she says, you know, that person's bald, just say, yes, that's right. And do you see the green bin? And do you see the brown dog? And look, the sky is blue and let's listen to the birds singing. And you point out other things and you just move on. Distraction, redirection is the best thing to do. As she gets a bit older, you can introduce the boundary of, we don't talk about people's bodies, we don't talk about what people look like. But 2, no, she's just playing with words.
Yeah. I recently lost both of my parents in quick succession, and it's naturally had a massive impact on our family, particularly my youngest son. He's 9, and since their passing, he's developed a massive fear of death. He's been having trouble sleeping and says he's worried that he's going to lose myself or his father. For context, my mother was his childminder for years. He would go to her house after school. She'd cook him dinner. They were the best of friends. Her death was somewhat sudden, came as a shock to everyone, including our son. My father, on the other hand, was sick for a long time. And when we knew he was about to pass away, we tried to have conversations with our son about what was going to happen to his granddad. Because death and illness have been around our house for a long period of time, I feel this has had a big impact on him. He has older siblings, and although they were upset by the deaths too, they seem to have handled it much better. I'm very worried for my son, especially the lack of sleep part. How can I put his mind at ease?
Oh, look, I'm not sure you can just put his mind at ease. And I'm so sorry for your loss. That's just such, you know, when you think about death has been a part of our family narrative for ages, that's such a big statement for all involved. And, you know, as adults, we have our own grief process that we're negotiating. The loss of your parents, no matter how old you are, is very, very painful. And it's hard then to respond and tend to your child's grief when you're grieving. You know, you can do something, but you know, you've got to mind yourself. And actually, I often think, Sean, that's the best thing we can do for our children is model good self-care, that we do take care of ourselves and we do hold space for grieving because it allows them to.
Yeah.
But when you say he's developed a massive fear of death and he's worried he's going to lose his parents, that's not a fear of death, that's grief.
Yes.
You know, that's grief for children. That's how children grieve. So, you know, in lots of ways, it's context specific, the fear you're talking about. He's thinking about death and losing his parents because he's witnessed you losing yours. So it's very real. It's very tangible. And the instinct we all have to rush to reassure our children, to say, no, 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 that won't happen. And we, of course, we cannot say that, you know, with the best will in the world. And we could say we hope and we're healthy and we're well, but you cannot guarantee something like that. And if you do, he knows you can't.
Yeah.
Like he knows it's not true.
Yeah.
I would suggest in this situation, specific grief therapy or play therapy that can address the grief, if you know what I mean, in that blended way. I think he's really grappling to understand really complex concepts and developmentally where he's at with that at 9 years old in terms of what he's capable of understanding. The permanence of death is coming in, but some of the kind of the curiosity of the scientific details of it as well, let me put it that way, is also coming in at that age, mixed with grief. And the granny who was his childminder and best
pal, that's a
double-edged
really hard one.
He's struggling. Yeah. And the great thing about this is he's showing you that he's struggling.
Yeah.
You know, and the disruption to sleep, equally, we always look when in my business at sleep, eating, toileting, as the is there a disruption there? Because children will play out a lot of distress that they struggle to articulate in those three areas, and it is affecting his sleep. You could be, depending on the nature of granddad's illness, a lot of organizations will have support available to family members who are affected. You could go down that route as well, or talk to your doctor. There are books, I've mentioned them. We get many questions about bereavement for children. You know, The Invisible String is the constant one by Patrice Carse, The Memory Tree by Britta Teckentrup, which I think would be particularly nice about the loss of granddad more than granny, because the nature of granny's passing was very different. And Molly Potter does a book, Let's Talk About When Someone Dies. It's very detailed. And as with any books, I would always suggest, especially though with bereavement, read them yourself first to make sure they fit within your family's belief framework and narrative.
Yeah.
And if not, select, use them as a support for a conversation you're going to have, that you can bring up things based on some of the bits in those books. I do think this little guy would benefit from his own therapeutic process, though.
Would the difference in the way each grandparent died make a difference to him, in the sense that, you know, he'd been forewarned about granddad, but granny, who was his minder, who was his friend, suddenly was plucked out,
away
from
him. I think that's the shock part, because when somebody's ill and you can talk about illness and treatment and not getting better and getting worse and end coming, not that that isn't difficult, it's incredibly difficult, but when there is a sudden unexpected death, it reminds you that actually you don't always get warning about these things.
Yeah.
And that's very confronting for any of us, but particularly for a young child who's then going, well, who else could just disappear on me?
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you.
As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.